Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Welcome to Hour 2 this morning on the 13th of June of Mornings with Carmen. I am your host for most of this week, Dr. Peter Kapster, and delighted to be back in the chair with you. As
you
you're
didn't
listening.
Say better part of this week.
I did. Paul, I made some adjustments from the first time that I did the intro because you are in the host chair tomorrow. You're going to be holding down the fort.
The worst part of the
week. Yeah, the worst part of the week,
there
right?
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course. And that
yes, but there's no self-promotion there at all.
No, none.
You know, and if you're listening this morning, you clearly can hear the voice of Bill English chiming in. And based on what I'm hearing, I might just bail an hour early from this last show of the week. It seems like the two of you are more than capable of handling the conversation moving forward.
So. Oh, yeah, I would agree with that, would you?
I'm not prepared to talk with you. No. I didn't study it.
Well, he's not prepared either.
No. You know, I follow the lead of the spirit, being as spiritually formed as I am, Bill English. And so there's we can just about go. Anyway, I better get out of here after this hour. Delightful to be joined by all of you listening across our Minneapolis, St. Paul area, Bismarck, Fargo, Sioux Falls, Madison, all of these different cities streaming through the app. It's so fun to start our day together as believers with a bit of laughter.
Was that written in ink?
Absolutely. So, Paul Perrose, I try to bring this thing from off the rails to back on the rails on some kind of level. One of the things that we have talked about this week, and Bill, I would love for you to chime in on this as well, is we talked a little bit early in the week about the changes to the Lord's Prayer that have been made by the Pope and the idea that God doesn't necessarily lead us into trial and temptation. And we've talked, Paul, you and I were noticing the show this morning that one of the themes of the week has been
the
sort of this post-Christendom and moving into suffering and turmoil in the church and persecution. And some of these things, many church observers say that we're headed that direction. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know that for sure, but I think it's at least worthwhile talking about those things. And Gary Stratton was on at the end of last hour talking about what we can actually to learn from the next generation, too, not just give the kingdom away, but learn in response. And my son came home about a month ago or so, and he had learned some things about what it meant to follow Jesus. And you and I were talking about fixing your eyes on Jesus, what it meant to follow that captain, that author, that archagos who made the way forward with us. And my son Caleb had come home and said, so, Dad, when Jesus says, follow me, if you were to understand that language in the original Greek, it was along the lines of, I am walking on a path, says Jesus, and I'm inviting you to merge the path of your life with my pathway and making it a single pathway. And I thought that was a pretty profound invitation, especially if things do continue to shift and change and moving into the next generation, there really is only one pathway of life. And that pathway is not capitalism. It is not socialism. It's not communism. It isn't all of these different ways of life that we do regularly analyze on this show and talk about. But there really is only one kingdom and one way forward, whether there is prosperity happening or whether there's persecution happening. We can fix our eyes and merge our pathways with Jesus.
You know, I think another angle on that is so much, I know in my generation, the talk was, you know, you got to have faith. You have to believe these propositional truths. And okay, great for the head, but what else does that mean? And the idea of what you're talking about, that merging. And another person mentioned the word allegiance, I heard a few months back. You're basically aligning. You're putting in full in with Christ regardless, and that's a scary thing. But
it is.
Bonhoeffer talked about that whole idea of counting the cost, but you're in.
Right, absolutely. And so I just encourage you wherever you're listening this morning, however you're listening, and if you're after work or you're deciding if you're going to get your kids out of bed as summer has started, wherever you are, to that today, again this day, choose to follow Jesus, merge your paths with him. I know that good friend Bill English does that in the world of business, and we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to walk out those paths in the form of stewardship of God's kingdom next on Mornings with Carmen. Well, over the break, you'll be happy to know I continue to try to get those cars back on those rails. I don't know how successful I've been, but it sure is delightful to see you, Bill English, in studio again.
It's good to see you again. Boy, I miss you.
Yeah, it's really fun. It just, you know, you just always bring such important conversations and perspective into this intersection of our business and vocational life with the life of the kingdom. And I typically leave our conversations just with quite a bit to think about related to my own life as a business person, too. So I appreciate how much you invest in this. And you're writing a book, from what I understand, and I've seen some of the draft copy of it. So tell us about it again.
Yeah, you know, it's really my life work. It's a culmination of over 10 years of thinking about things, reading, and trying to live it out in the business world, both as a business owner and now as a very minority owner in a business, and yet having stewardship responsibilities back to investors and other owners. And it should be about 20 chapters. I'm counting on it being give or take 350, 400 pages.
Okay.
And it will cover parts of the Christian business reference architecture, which is how I think about how Christian business owners ought to think about business.
Hmm.
And it's a reference architecture that God helped me develop over a 10-year period. And it really helps you consider everything that a Christian business owner should consider when it comes to running their business and stewarding their business the way God intends. These are all the things you need to think about. It doesn't tell you what to do. It's not a strategy. It's not a process. It's not a procedure. It's a reference architecture. And so my book starts with that, and then we walk through parts of the reference architecture, the first part of which is who you are as a business owner directly impacts your ability to steward the business that God has given to you. So the first chapter is on – I'm not going to go through all 20 chapters.
Right.
Don't worry. Don't worry. You're looking at me like,
yeah,
Bill.
Yeah, I'm starting to zone out,
this
Bill.
This is really going way too long here, Bill. No, first chapter is about the reference architecture. Second chapter is about – becoming free from the bondage of sin.
Yeah.
Because as a business owner, if you're in bondage to sin, the rest of this isn't going to matter. You're not going to be able to steward your business the way God intends. I got that chapter done. That's out to the reviewers. Now I'm working on finishing up your role as a steward. What does it mean to be a steward? And I'm about 70, 80% done writing that chapter. And then we'll move on to hearing the voice of God and decision making. We'll move on to making sure that you're being mentored and you're mentoring. Passing it on, and then we're going to get into the purposes that God has for business. Why did God create business? If you ask that question, why did God create business? I think the vast majority of Christians would go, I don't know.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, it's something to do during the day, and it creates wealth and that kind of thing. I think there's four purposes. We'll go over those purposes in my book and do some other things.
Yeah. And Bill, I would imagine the process of writing a book, and you talk about it, it's your life's work. And then I think about, as we walk out this journey of life and have a lot more maybe sod under our feet than what we have left in front of us. There's, I think, a bit of a cathartic process that happens. I mean, this book has to be a bit of a memoir of sorts for you, I think, about all of what you've learned in business. And I think about when Jesus says these beautiful words, do this in remembrance of me. It's not just to remember the past and reflect on it. It's to once again bring those realities of the past into the present. And in the case of communion, it is to bring the power of freedom from sin into our present reality again. So when we celebrate that table, there's an active power. But there's something about the rhythm of remembering and reflecting for all of us, business, life, whatever it is, that helps us stay anchored, I think. And so not just writing books, but for people listening to journal, to keep a diary of sorts, memoirs, it's really an important thing. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that maybe you've forgotten that is reemerging in your life from doing this process.
You know, this is my 15th or 16th book that I've written. Most of those books, almost every other book I wrote was, most of them were for Microsoft Press.
Right.
And they were either on SharePoint or Exchange. And I remember picking up a SharePoint book that I had just published a few months earlier, and I had all co-authors write several of the chapters, and I read part of it, and I go, wow, that's good stuff. I didn't even remember that it was in the book, so that does happen. But I'll tell you, it's going to become a theology of business ownership is really what I'm writing. And I'm probably the least qualified to write a theology of anything. Maybe ditch digging. I could do a theology of ditch digging. But I'm just not the right person to write it. But God's called me. I'm doing it. And I think I'm writing for future generations.
Well, I think there is something about leaving something behind like that, and especially I appreciate just the idea of a theology of business, because those two words don't usually exist in the same sentence. And yet, I know there's probably a lot of people listening that are in their vocation or in their business specifically, and sometimes feel like they have to check their faith at the door, or maybe even better said, they don't know how to integrate their faith within the realities of their business. And this is part of what you're leaving behind.
It is. I estimate there's 2 million Christian business owners in the United States, roughly, give or take 650 per county in the United States. And I think if you were to go up to and ask the average Christian business owner, would you like to steward your business for Jesus Christ? I think 95% of them would say, yeah,
you're right.
I'd like to do that. And then they'd say, well, how do you do that? And that's what my book is. That's the question my book is answering. I think the audience for this is very niche and very narrow, but very, very important, because when you look at when you look at ministries around the world, they are all funded by profitable business.
Right.
And they're only funded by profitable businesses run by Christians. So, you know, I'm really talking to the Christian business owner who God is going to enable to create wealth that's going to be funneled into ministries so that the gospel can move forward.
Well, it's certainly one of the most popular degree tracks that I still see in university settings is the business track. So I think you talk about this being a niche audience, but I think it can be for parents and grandparents as well, who might have children and grandchildren going into business, to help them really anchor themselves that there's more to it than trying to create economic opportunity for yourself.
But so many of these Christian college, I'm sorry, I know I'm at a Christian college. This is Northwestern Radio. I get it.
Right.
But so many Christian colleges are just me too business programs, and I don't know how much integration they actually have at the Christian college or the Christian MBA level. I just don't know that it's there.
Yeah, I know. Not in this university, but I've taught in universities where mostly the integration was a prayer before and after the certain class,
exactly.
But otherwise it was normal economic principles. Well, it's Bill, Voice of Bill English, talking about stewardship and a theology of business. We'll take a short break, and we will get into the specifics of what Bill means by stewarding God's kingdom next on Mornings with Carmen. Ninety minutes after the top of the hour here on Mornings with Carmen. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, substituting this week for Carmen LeBurge, who's enjoying vacation, and in studio with good friend Bill English. And Bill, we talked before the break about your book quite a bit and about the idea of stewarding God's kingdom within a theology of business. Say more about that. What do you mean by stewarding God's kingdom in this context?
Well, stewardship really has two parts to it, right? So just conceptually, there's ownership and there's entrustments. So the Bible is very clear in Psalm 50, Psalm 24, and in other places that God owns everything, right?
Right.
The shirt I'm wearing, the shirt you're wearing, Paul's glasses, our houses, our businesses, our churches, God owns everything. If he owns a cattle on a thousand hills, that's a euphemism for everything. So God gets to give to people talents, resources, those kinds of things, and he gives those to us to create wealth, right, and to further his kingdom. Now, is creating wealth furthering his kingdom? It can be. It can also not be, right? It depends on how we view the wealth and use it. The thing that I found in it was interesting, because I was writing this section on ownership and entrustments in this chapter, and the Holy Spirit just kind of said, just remember that there's actually stewardship within the Trinity. And I went, really? And he took me to Matthew 28:18. Mm-hmm. All authority in heaven, this is Christ speaking, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, therefore go, right? Well, the passage rightly interpreted is all about discipleship and missional and let's go out and disciple and spread the gospel. I get that. A minor point in that chapter is that Christ received his authority from God, and now he is saying, because I have this authority, you go. The stewardship of God owning the authority, all authority in heaven and on earth, has now been entrusted to Christ, okay? There's stewardship there. Christ is now stewarding the authority that God has given him. Then you fast forward to John 16. I don't know if it's fast forward chronologically, but it is.
Sure.
It is in the New Testament. And in his final discourse, as he's walking from the upper room down to the Garden of Gethsemane, he's saying this to his disciples. And he says, but when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all truth. Now listen to this. He will not speak on his own. He will only speak what he hears, and he will tell you what is yet to come. He will glorify me because it is from me that he will receive what he will make known to you. All that belongs to the Father is mine. So we know that from Matthew 28. Christ reiterates it here. That is why I said the Spirit will receive from me what he will make known to you. So now we have the role of the Holy Spirit. He is taking from Christ, and he is communicating to us. So from God comes authority and message to Christ. From Christ, the message delivery is through the Holy Spirit. And the Spirit just speaks on his own. He doesn't speak. He only speaks what he hears.
Right.
So when the Spirit speaks to you, right, or to me, or to Paul, that the authority behind that is coming from Jesus Christ, an entrustment. Christ is taking the message, entrusting it to the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is stewarding that message by delivering it to us.
Well, and it's a fascinating paradigm that you're presenting here, Bill. And I was listening to a little bit of news reporting on the way into studio this morning, and there was this contrast between socialism and capitalism that was being bantered back and forth between some of the talking heads on the show. And one of the things that said is that capitalism really creates wealth, and people are entitled to realize their wealth and to enjoy the fruits of their wealth if they work really hard for it. And so there's sort of this embedded philosophy sometimes within capitalism that if I work hard enough, I'm entitled to own and enjoy the fruits of my labor. But what you're talking about is that in all things we are steward. We're stewards. We may work exceptionally hard, but that doesn't give us the right of ownership. We are still stewards within God's kingdom.
How you view the wealth that you create with your business directly impacts how you view authority in life. Okay, so if I am a steward of that which God has given to me, then I know authority is with Jesus Christ. Right. But if I take the American legal view of authority, then this is my money. It's my business. I can do with it what I want, and no one can really stop me. And that is a huge dichotomy between a Christian business owner and an American business owner. And one of my purposes in life is to call Christian business owners who think like Americans to start thinking biblically about stewardship and ownership. And by the way, in Ecclesiastes 5, it says that sometimes God does enable us to enjoy our wealth, right? You know, when God gives wealth to somebody and enables him to enjoy it, right? But that enjoyment comes from God, and it comes after we realize that all that we have, all that we create, all the money that we have, all the prestige, everything is owned by God. Even when we're creating it, it's still owned by God. Matthew 25, I'm probably going long here, but in Matthew 25, you'll remember when the servants got the talents, and they got 5, 2, and 1 talents, they never considered those talents theirs. They said, here's your first 5 back to the master. Oh, and by the way, here's the other talents I made for you.
Well, and I think, again, and you referenced the point of celebration, that I think it would be maybe a misunderstanding of stewardship to assume that stewardship means that we are always giving everything away on behalf of other people. Stewardship really is the idea that I'm going to be consistently listening to the voice of the Spirit, as you referenced, to know what to do with this money. And sometimes we are invited to just celebrate, kill the fatted calf, as it were, is one of the invitations in the biblical text. But the point of stewardship is that this life is not our own. This money is not our own. It's been purchased with a price. And so we're constantly listening to the still small voice of God about what to do on behalf of the future.
Exactly. And so my role in the kingdom is to steward a business, to represent Christ in the workplace, to create wealth, those kinds of things. But none of it belongs to me. And I think if we can see stewardship and entrustments and ownership within the Trinity, that forms a theological foundation for us really driving home this notion that Christian business owners are inherently distinctly different than all the other business owners, in part because of how we view authority and how we view ownership in our businesses.
It's so important. We have just about a minute left here, Bill. I would suggest, I know somebody close to me who's owned a business for a very long time, and it was some of those moments of real difficult times in the business that really formed an invitation to try to let go of the very tight grip I think many Christian business owners have. And that really is the first step in the pathway to stewardship, is it not, to just open up those hands and say, hey, even if this fails, I will still follow you.
I will still follow you, and the high control type A personalities that are usually entrepreneurs, those are the personalities that need to hear this message and really need to bow their knee to Jesus Christ.
Well, it's great to see you again. I look forward to continuing.
Good to see you.
It sounds like you have about 18 chapters left as well, so not much work ahead of you on this book.
No, not a lot.
Well, wonderful. We'll continue to follow that journey. Thanks for giving us a bit of a theology of business that hopefully we can leave behind for the future.
Bet.
Take a short break for some Breakpoint and bottom of the hour news, and in the last half of this hour, we'll be joined by John Wood and Rob Robertson of the Better Angels, and we'll talk about what it means to depolarize our lives so we can help in the process of political depolarization in our country. You know, Paul, the headlines that we wake up to each morning are sort of an endless source of fascination to me. As spring has sprung, we see that there is a new Guinness World Record that has been broken, and it has to do with mowing the lawn, something that I find myself doing very regularly. But I was a little surprised by this headline that Honda's new mean mower V2 has broken the world record. It can go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in just 6.29 seconds, hitting a top speed of over 150 miles per hour. Is there anything we can possibly say about this?
Only to quote Tim the Toolman Taylor.
I think that is wildly appropriate. I cannot imagine cutting the lawn at that speed, but if you have access to one of these mowers and you want to send us a YouTube video of you on this machine, we'd sure love to see it. Well, up next here on Mornings with Carmen, as we wrap up the show for today, be joined by Better Angels, and we'll talk a little bit about polarization in our country and how we as believers can help bring some healing and wholeness and reconciliation as part and on behalf of our country.
Did your parents ever use this line when you were a kid? Do as I say, not as I do. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. It may sound good in theory, but in reality, kids base their habits and attitudes on what they see, not on what they hear. For example, if parents aren't grateful, their children won't be either. When moms and dads don't know how to handle conflict, neither will their kids. And if parents never demonstrate self-control, well, you get the point. Hey, I know that nobody's perfect, but this week, take my challenge to reflect on a kind of legacy you're leaving. Do you practice what you preach, or is it just talk? As parents, let's be godly examples to our families and both say and do what's right.
Learn how to get your teen back on track. Get instant access to Mark's free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your substitute host for the week, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined by John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels Ministry that seeks to sort of build some reconciliation bridges across the polarized divides in our country. Good morning, you two.
Good morning, Peter.
Great to hear your voices again. Rob, I know that you were talking a little bit about, and as part of the show prep, the need to go ahead and look at how we can depolarize our own lives before we head into these conversations. What do you mean by that?
I think how we approach others around us has really changed in the last few years, possibly as a result of social media and the, you know, hit and run attack philosophy. Tensions get exacerbated, people get angry much quicker. And so, you know, perhaps if I start with myself, thinking about how I engage with others in a conversation, maybe our conversation will go a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
No, this is John.
Well,
I was just going to jump in on that and say that, you know, one of the fundamental sort of elements of our theory of change over at Better Angels is that ultimately the way we want to sort of shift away from the toxic nature of the political discourse that Rob was describing is by starting with our own internal conversation and letting that sort of seep out to the conversations that we have with other people. So we actually have new programs that we're offering that are focused on doing just that, workshop programs that basically start with asking us to look inward and ask certain questions of ourselves and provide answers to them. Like, for instance, in our Depolarizing Within workshop, we have a question we ask people to reflect on, which reads, how often do I find myself thinking about, quote, those people, unquote, on the other political side without having a regard for the variation in their points of view, the nuances in them. Because, you know, thinking stereotypically, we paint everybody with a broad brush, and that keeps us from being able to see the humanity that we have in common. So one key question for us to ask ourselves, and of course we have many others.
Well, and I think it's especially pervasive, you two, to think about the echo chambers in which we live. And that echo chamber is we sort of only listen to those points of view that already echo within us and begin to harden those points of view. And so I would think part of that process of internal depolarization is to expose yourself to other points of view, whether you agree with them or not, and also to live in authentic relationship with people who maybe don't think, act, even eat or enjoy the kinds of things that you might enjoy. Rob, would those be some simple steps towards beginning that depolarization process?
They would, but it also involves being open to folks when you interact with them. So think of making your grandmother proud when you interact with people. I think that really is what it comes down to. We've forgotten a lot of the stuff we learned as children when we deal with people in a political environment and sometimes in other environments. So the golden rule has a place here. Make your grandmother proud. Be curious. Be civil and respectful. Pause before speaking. And it's not that hard, but it takes commitment.
You know, it really does, John, too. You can chime in on this as well. But I remember working in a church at one point, and one of our leading pastors of the community life group of which I was a part in pastoral ministry said that our key value that's going to drive our conversations as a pastoral team is mutuality. And I didn't even really know what she meant by it in that moment. But what she was talking about is, I think, Rob, what you were saying, and John, I'd love your comments now on that too, is being truly and authentically open to another person's perspective and point of view. At the end of the day, it's not about agreement necessarily, but it is about having an open heart towards others.
Well, that's right. Rob, I like the idea to make your grandmother proud. Having grandma as a little angel on your shoulder is probably probably a good way to think about it. But, you know, embracing the golden rule and essentially, you know, sort of the virtue of the Gospels in, first of all, loving your neighbor as you love it yourself, and secondly, sort of perceiving the plank in your own eye before you try and remove the speck in your brother's. I think that particularly as people of faith, we need to think in terms of modeling the love and the understanding that comes through in the spirit of the Gospels and the Bible that we take to heart so deeply, and applying that to the relationships that we have with people that in relationships we have with people that will allow us to sort of seize upon those openings we have to sort of introduce some genuine sympathy, some genuine understanding, and some genuine opportunities for us to build relationships, as you said, Peter, around those deeper areas of values where we actually have agreement. And we still have a lot of that in America. We have a common commitment to liberty, to equality of opportunity, to justice in this country. We may not always agree in terms of how exactly we need to get there, but if we keep these starting points in mind, we'll realize that there's a lot that can still bind us together as Americans that will enable us to deal with each other as fellow human beings and children of God.
Well, and I think you bring up such an important point, and that is that you start this focus on what unites us and find that commonality and really begin to see one another as fellow human beings. When we begin to experience the tension of difference between us, and you guys have been talking a little bit about this value of tolerance that seems to become increasingly pervasive over the last 20 years or so, that there is a downside to the idea then just of tolerance. You can't, if you have some significantly competing ways of life, even if you're united in other ways, tolerance isn't always the answer in that situation. So talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a fascinating point. I mean, Rob, if I could just say a little bit about that. Arthur Brooks has a great book that came out recently that's actually called Love Your Enemies. And in it, he says that tolerance is not the answer because tolerance is not a deep enough value, right? If we're just sort of tolerating one another's differences, that really just sort of means we're putting up with each other, right? And it's true that differences in the way we look at things is going to lead to conflict. That's always going to be the case. But if we say to each other that we can find ways to we can find ways to disagree and to compete passionately in the political marketplace while still honoring each other's humanity in the process, the way Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. exemplified in his life and in his work, well, then we've got a way forward to dealing with these differences that allows us to do more than tolerate each other, but actually sort of preserve some relationship with each other as well, even when we're duking it out at the ballot box, so to speak.
Well, and I'm sure that neither one of you two have ever been wrong in your life, but I have to imagine that I don't remember the last time that I saw a politician or visible leader in our country come out and say, you know what, I was really wrong on that one. But I would have to believe that sort of humble analysis of what you, views you hold and a willingness to change them should the data merit such a change is one of those things that can really model a movement forward in unity.
Mm. I think that's a great point. Rob, did you want to say something to that?
I think I'd like to offer a couple of practical tips. The first is for social media. Many of us are on social media, and things blow up quickly on social media. So here's something folks may want to try. A 48-hour rule. Don't react to anything except cat and puppy and baby pictures before 48 hours. Give it 48 hours. More information always comes out. The heart and soul calms in that 48-hour period. Give it a little time. We don't need to react immediately.
That's a great first tip. Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to offer, well, it's not original, by the way. I have to give somebody else credit for it. The other thing I want to offer is to interact with each other in person and online in a spirit of curiosity. Somebody told me that the question, "Tell me more about that, please," elicits a lot more from the other person than, "Why do you think that?" or, "You're an idiot to think that." So, "Tell me more about that. Can you tell me more? I'd like to hear more about that." People will open up and tell you more about why they feel the way they feel. Curiosity is key.
And
we don't have to agree with the other, but it's helpful to understand. And we learn a lot about them as people, and we develop relationships. We may disagree fiercely on issues and still be fond of each other. That's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, and
we're
is the spirit of the cooperation that typically has been the case in our country, is that there's been a fondness for each other. You see it in politicians going out for dinner afterwards or being in the same space at social gatherings, even though they may have really fought with each other tooth and nail philosophically on the Capitol floor. But there still is a fondness in light of that. And when we come back from break, we need to take a short break. When we come back and ask you more about that, how do you keep that spirit of fondness for another person even though you disagree vehemently with them? So more to come with Better Angels. John Wood and Rob Robertson here next on Mornings with Carmen. It is about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Mornings with Carmen, and we're chatting with John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels Ministry. And I know this time next week is the beginning of a national conference for Better Angels that's going to run through a week from this weekend. Tell us a little bit about it here, John.
Yeah, well, Peter, at the break, you mentioned tackling this question of how we maintain friendships across party differences, and that'll certainly be one of many things that winds up coming up at this convention. So it's from June 20th to June 23rd, Washington University in St. Louis. We are going to have grassroots leaders from both sides of the aisle, close to about 300 or so, flying out from across the country for 3 days of dedicated exercises, communications, and collaboration over the path forward for Better Angels and the sort of depolarization movement as a whole in America, to chart a course for how it is we ultimately unite this country around deeper values and a deeper sense of what it is to be an American. We're going to have leaders there from the Tea Party, from Black Lives Matter, individuals speaking from who had worked in the Trump administration, who had worked with Obama and Clinton. So it's really a gathering of Americans who are committed to the fundamental identity of this country and our bedrock ability to bring out the best in each other as Americans. A lot of folks who don't agree on taxes and healthcare necessarily, but who agree that we need to get back to some civic fundamentals in our society. And so that's what the convention is going to be about, and we're looking forward to an incredible show.
Well, and it's being hosted in St. Louis, Missouri, so there's a lot of people in our listening audience for whom St. Louis, Missouri is an accessible drive, and I assume they can still sign up and be part of it if they'd like to.
Well, they can definitely go to our website, better-angels.org. Look up our convention. The deadline is pretty much is close to being about upon us. But even so, if you're interested in coming out, you can go check it out, fill out an application, and get on the list. And hopefully, we'll see you in St. Louis.
Now, John and Rob, we just have a couple minutes left, but you mentioned something during the break that I did want to touch on this morning with you, and that has to do with taking this conversation of just going across party lines and depolarization into maybe the hottest topic today, and that's the topic of abortion. And it sounds like one of you is holding a bit of a forum or symposium on this on Monday. How do we possibly enter into this where there is such an ideological and moral divide happening between both sides?
Boy, that's a great question. I think... Really, the key is the process that we use. We call this a Better Angels debate. You might call it a town meeting or a community conversation. A bunch of people agree to come together to interact with each other in a certain way. Respect, maintaining decorum, we use a parliamentary procedure that many people find very awkward, but quickly come to appreciate. It insulates ideas from people, and it is a wonderful way for folks to listen carefully and thoughtfully without having to prepare their rebuttal, and to speak without worrying about defending themselves. We've talked about immigration, about political correctness in Northampton, Massachusetts. Some of your listeners are in the Hartford, Connecticut area. We welcome folks to come up to Northampton on Monday the 17th when this will be happening. If you look for the event on Facebook, you will find it. Better Angels Debate, Northampton, Massachusetts.
The other remarkable thing that the debate model does is it actually encourages us to focus on the things that we don't know or are not sure about in the context of voicing our opinion. So it's not something that we do with a focus on one side or the other winning. The point is for you to be honest about your arguments, honest about your beliefs and convictions, state them persuasively, but to also exercise intellectual humility and being open about the areas in which you may not be entirely sure about your own opinion or where you might think that the other side has a point, even if you ultimately disagree. And this lubricates a sort of conversation that can actually make moral progress in terms of informing our mutual understanding and maybe allowing us to burrow towards some deeper shared values underneath that along the way.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an incredible opportunity on Monday to model some of what you guys are engaged with day in and day out, and you referenced the Hartford area. I would really recommend, if you're listening in Hartford and are close enough to where the conference is happening, attending that on Monday. John and Rob, thanks for the great work that you do on behalf of trying to healing some of these political divides, and look forward to the next conversation.
Thanks again, Peter.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Take a break here and wrap up our show for the 13th of June on Mornings with Carmen. Paul, we started this week with some passages from the book of Hebrews in Hebrews 10, 24, 25. Let us not give up the habit of meeting together. And it sure has been delightful to be meeting with you this morning, to meeting with all the listeners that are listening through. There's something about that spending this time together. It really does encourage the heart.
It does. And even if people are just listening to car, there is kind of that, at least I hope we had sort of a feeling of, hey, you're in on something.
Yeah,
you're part of this community.
And they really are. We're in this whole thing together. We can't do this journey alone. And so this is one way we can model that part of the conversation with the guests and with all the listeners that have texted in, emailed in, and listen each day. Appreciate being with you on that. And Paul, I know you're going to be in the host chair tomorrow as we're off to Iceland and Paris.
No stress there. No tension here.
Who do you have on the show tomorrow?
Oh, well, we'll have Matt Hawkins. He'll be up first up, and he's going to be talking about an editorial he wrote. Was it in the Wall Street Journal, I think? One of those. But the whole issue of Joe Biden, he switched on his support. Now he doesn't support the Hyde Amendment. Plus, we'll be looking at the Southern Baptist Convention. They had their big meeting this week and some of the news out of that. There's more that happened than what you see in the news headlines. We'll get on that. And Oh, boy, we're going to talk movies with Adam Holtz, and we'll have other guests, too, but it should be a good time.
That'd be great. Well, I'm sure when we land in Reykjavik tomorrow morning that we will go ahead, and maybe while I'm eating the national dish of fermented shark in Iceland,
that,
I think I'll be streaming you with Matt Hawkins, because it sounds like a great conversation. I have enjoyed my national dish of haggis in Scotland, and if listeners know what that's made of, it is a little dicey, but it sounds like fermented shark is perhaps maybe the worst dish worldwide, so I can't promise I'm going to partake of that.
It sounds worse than lutefisk.
It really I think it's a very different process by which it is made. Well, if you're listening this morning, let's leave you with one piece of encouragement. Again, it's how we started the show from Hebrews 12, and that is, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us continue to run this crazy race of life with perseverance that has been marked out for us, and we'll do this together, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author, the pioneer, and the perfecter of our faith. He is the captain of the host that has made a way forward. So merge your path with his again today as you continue to follow him.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.